Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
So the most asked question on Google is, what's the meaning of life? I thought that was interesting. Maybe that's only after you sort out the Kim Kardashian questions. I don't even know what question you even ask. There's not much mystery left when it comes to that girl. But we're searching through the book of Ecclesiastes, where he's asking these questions, or better yet, maybe even answering these questions about the meaning of life. And it seems like it's something that we're all chasing, and maybe if we had won $1.5 billion, we could have the means to pursue the answer ourselves. But since we don't, or haven't, nobody did in here, did they? I don't think anybody close enough. Somebody won $1 million close to us, but if you're here, good to have you, as everybody else. So anyways, moving on. We're actually looking at a guy who had that kind of means and that kind of time to sort of sort these things out. And in that quick little video, there's so many videos I watch just to see kind of what's out there on the meaning of life. And that's one kind of summarized up, 4 out of the 5 main answers people give. And when people wonder what's the meaning of life, they start off with, well, helping others. I want to make the world a better place. I want to do something for somebody else. And so we start off with helping each other or making something that's better, creating something that's superior, creating a better widget, creating a better way to do something. And if we can just find some better way to help humanity out by making something better or doing something better, that will give us meaning or significance or make us feel like we had an impact, because we look at the people who made a light bulb and said that made all of humanity better. So, wow, he must have really had some sort of sense of meaning about his life for having done that. Or perhaps it's understanding and searching out wisdom. And maybe if you get another degree, or maybe you understand something a little bit better, the meaning of life is having a deeper understanding of what it is you're doing. And so many people go through life, they don't know what's going on. If you could just know more, well, then maybe you'd have more meaning in life. Others would say, no, it's about connection and having the relationships. And for some of you, you're seeking that special someone or that connection somehow, some way, thinking that if you had the connection, you had the perfect relationship, or had enough relationships, or were well-liked or well-thought of, then you'd have the meaning of life. And the only one that video missed out on is where people just pursue fun. And I didn't put it in there. It was a great clip, you can find it online, of a guy named Christopher Hutchins, who's a well-known atheist who passed away just a few years ago. He and a couple others would kind of tour the circuit and kind of share their philosophy of life. He was a philosopher, a writer, and had a worldview like what Solomon's pursuing, where he looked at life as, what is there to pursue under the sun? And at one of the forums he was doing, somebody asked the question, without a belief in God, what do you believe the meaning of life is? And so he goes to answer, and it's interesting. He really, he tells 3 jokes, and then that's it. He's like, well, you know, it's, and he just kind of says, you know, this is kind of fun to do. This is kind of fun to do. I don't really ponder too much because I'm kind of having fun doing this. And, you know, he gets a good laugh out of everybody. And kind of, remember I said last week, if you don't have a relationship with God and you're looking for meaning outside of that, you're going to pursue some other diversion, some other distraction. And that's what he does. He diverts and distracts the audience with jokes. And then they kind of forget about the question and they move on. I'm like, how can you not push him on an answer for that? And basically his summary is, well, just have a good time. And those are the avenues that we pursue. And I think that when you get one of those answers and you're at a moment like that where you're at a forum and you ask somebody, what's the meaning of life? And they give you this explanation that has something to do with helping people or understanding life or having fun. You listen to that and your thought and somewhere in the recesses of your mind is, well, I think there's something to that because I experience some sense of satisfaction and meaning when I do that. Maybe the problem is I just haven't done it enough, or I haven't just done it on a big enough scale yet. And yes, I've sort of figured out a way to make a better something for my household. But if I could sort of like expand on that, make everybody's household better, well, then that's where the meaning would be. Or if I've helped, you know, I know what it means to help somebody, and I have that sense of satisfaction, fulfillment, and meaning when I help one person. But if I could help lots of people, then if I could just take everything to the nth degree, if I could just do more, then it would be enough, perhaps maybe to fill that void of meaning that I have. And Solomon comes along, and he's somebody who says, well, I've had more. I've done more. I've done it all. And this is, I went on the same pursuit. And he says, I've done all these things and it still left me feeling meaningless. And so that's what chapter 2 of Ecclesiastes is all about. It's his pursuit of more. It's his pursuit of trying to find what is enough. And I would guess if I would give this sermon a title is when is enough enough? And so Solomon is trying to fill this void, and he's seeking that there would be something that would be enough. And so he says in chapter 2, verse 1, he says, I thought to my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. All right, Mr. Hutchins, if you say that having fun and enjoyment is the meaning of life, I'll pursue it to the nth degree to see what out there is to do. And he says, come now, I'll test you with pleasure to find out what is good. He says, but that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, and my mind was still guiding me with wisdom. Now, he's gonna say that at the beginning of this chapter and also towards the end, my mind was still guiding me with wisdom. And so what he's basically saying is, don't think that I got caught up in the party that I forgot what I was doing. No, I was on this pursuit of trying to find meaning in life, and I was trying to find that meaning somewhere in a party and somewhere in having a good time. And I never got so drunk, or I never got so carried away that I forgot what I was pursuing. It's not like as if I just got carried away, wasn't thinking about it. No, I would take these times to reflect. So he says, in all of this, I was still being guided by wisdom because I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men to do under heaven during the very few days of our life. And as I was thinking about this, I think all of us sort of pursue the things in chapter 2 that Solomon talks about sort of in the sequence that he talks about them. We start off in life and everything is a party. Like my kids right now, they literally move from one party to the next. Life is not about school. It's about three-day weekends like the one we have coming up. Even if they don't know what it's about, they know there's a three-day weekend, and it's about a party, and it's about fun. And it's just basically one birthday to the next birthday. It's one basketball game to the next basketball game. It's just fun event to fun event to fun event, which is why you look at your kids with envy and you go, oh, to be a kid again. Why? Because to be a kid means you just go from one party to the next. And as soon as you're done with this birthday party, the question is, when's the next party on the calendar? And the only thing that messes up the party lifestyle for a kid is parents, right? Because parents are the limiter to party. Okay, because parents are the ones who say it's time to go home. Parents are the ones who tell you when you have to be home. Parents are the ones who keep you from really getting carried away at the party because, you know, there's got to be something more that we can do to have more fun at the party, and it's the parents who are limiting it. So what is college? What is post-high school? It is the pursuit of the ultimate party because the parents have been holding me back. They're now that they're holding me back anymore. So now you can really, really, really have fun. And Solomon comes along. He says, listen, I have partied. I have partied and partied and partied and partied and partied, and I haven't found anything about it. And I know what you're thinking. There is no way anybody whose name is mentioned in the Bible could possibly know what the definition of partying really is. He does not know. There's no way he could possibly party the way I partied. And if you read about Solomon, he's looking at you and laughing at you, okay? He says, when I would throw a party, this is over in 1 Kings, he says, I would kill 10 fattened oxen, I would kill 20 pasteurized fed cattle, 100 sheep, a bunch of deer, gazelles, roebuck, fattened cow, everything else. And that's what I would do for my party. So your little whole marinated meat, bring your own dish, side dish sort of party that you had over Christmas break, your little thing where you got some friends together to watch the ball drop or maybe watch some little concert in the park, that little whole thing or that other little thing where you did with chicken wings and some friends around there watching the ball game the other night. You would come in on Monday morning bragging about the fun time you had. Solomon would just sit back, listen, and then he'd be that annoying guy at the office who then mocks you about your party. That little thing that lasted one night. He's like, no, my party's lasted weeks on end. The wine kept flowing and never stopped. Everybody was drunk. Everybody was passed out. Everybody had so much fun. They can't even remember how much fun they had at my kind of parties. Some of y'all have been there, unfortunately. And so he parties and he parties and he parties and he parties, and he gets to the point where he's pretty much partied out. Like you can only wake up on the backside of a chariot headed to Egypt with a new tattoo so many times before you kind of realize you've got to do something else. You've got to make something of your life. And so somewhere, hopefully in your early 20s, if not late 20s, you will move out of the party scene realizing there's really nothing there. There's really nothing fulfilling there. It's just a waste of money and time and everything else. So we'll just move on. And he says, you know, I went after projects. He says, verse 4, I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and I planted vineyards and made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. And I made reservoirs and water groves and flourishing trees. And So he's setting out to make something out of himself. And just like in the video said, that you pursue meaning by doing something that's better or creating something that's superior. You have an ugly looking yard, and so you make it look like a beautiful yard. And Solomon's like, a yard? I was making national parks is what I was out doing. I mean, not just a small scale, but on a grand scale. So if you think that if you have some sort of satisfaction doing something small, what if you just did more and more and more? That's the scale I was doing it at, so people could enjoy it as I built it and as I did it. And you can kind of see him tracking here, and I can understand why philosophers would say building or doing or creating is the meaning of life, because you have that sense of fulfillment when you create something. And I don't care whether you just created something you saw on Pinterest and you made it and you made it better and you found a better way to do it and then you created a Pinterest how-to page on it, or if you're like me and you like doing woodworking and building something and you kind of have that moment where you look at the project that you made and you just kind of step back and you take it on and you go, wow, this looks good. You know, and I've thoroughly enjoyed all of the building projects we've done at this church. And Pastor Bobby and I would sit down. We have issues of space, and we would kind of map out something and come up with something in our mind that could be done. We'd go to builders and architects, and they'd say, well, to do that, it would cost this much money. It would probably take 3-4 months. And Bobby and I would get in the office and say, all right, we got to do this in a week. And here's the crazy thing. We did. And that was what was so fun, because we have something that no builder in town has. I don't know of any builder that has hundreds and hundreds of people who want to be used in an essential way by God to do something meaningful and lasting in our community. And so, whereas a builder might have a crew of 20 people that would come in, we would have a crew of 200 people that would come in. And that would be all of you all doing it. So just by the way, there used to be 2 floors here, and there used to be 2 floors there. These were like separate meeting rooms. And there was a wall from that door to that corner right there. And when we went to builders and said we need to make some more room in our sanctuary because the church would continue to grow, they literally told us it'd take 4 months to do something like that, to knock the whole thing out. It'd be a big construction project. We said, no, we got to do it in a week. And we pulled it off in a week, which was, I mean, literally, we came in, there was walls there, people came back the next Sunday, it was open. They were like, how on earth did that happen? It was a blast doing that. And you kind of have this sense when you kind of pull back and you're like, what's the guy from A-Team always say? I love it when a plan comes together. Yeah, come on, you know, some of y'all, how many of y'all, you grew up watching the A-Team, right? Yeah, he says, I love it when a plan, and that's how you feel. And you have that sense, like, if my life could be about this feeling, it would have meaning and it would have purpose. And Solomon's like, no, I did that over and over and over and over again. And the problem is that when you create something and you do it, as soon as you have that sense of satisfaction, there's a little voice that whispers in your ear, or there's some reporter that comes up and sticks a microphone in your face and basically asks, okay, what next? What are you going to do next that is going to be bigger and better than what you've done? You know, winning the championship is great, but repeating is better. And then if repeating is really good, what if you could three-peat? You know that phrase was actually coined, trademarked by Pat Riley back in the Laker days when he would win back-to-back titles. And so people were always asking if he's going to repeat again. And so he used the word three-peat. I don't think he ever did three-peat, but he coined the term. So when somebody else did, he made money off it. Side note. Anyways, moving on. I digress with useless information. So Solomon was plagued by this bigger and better. And what does he do to make something bigger and better? If you want to really know, like, did this guy really pursue these things to the nth degree? Did he really pursue them as far as they could go? I would dare say his resume stacks up pretty well. He created the temple. And by the way, if you know what the temple is, it was considered one of the 7 great wonders of the ancient world. Just let that sink in. I would say that's a pretty good resume to have, to say you have built and you've created enough to know whether or not building and creating can give you a sense of satisfaction, meaning, and purpose. Is that fair to say? If you are the sole architect and creator of one of the 7 ancient wonders of the world, I mean, there's only 7 of them, and he did one of them, okay? That's one of the things he created. There's like the 7 ancient wonders and the 7 natural wonders. So basically, God did 7, humanity has done 7. He's done one of those 7. I think that is a very good resume to say he's tried to build bigger and better to the point where everybody recognizes it and says, yeah, that's about as big and better as you can get. It was the kind of thing where he took like a ton of gold, a ton of it, melted it down and used that for the wallpaper linings. I mean, this thing was massive and amazing. The public works projects he did are still there today. Like, I know, like, you maybe have made like a little koi pond in your front yard or something. He made reservoirs hewed out of stone that are still there 3,000 years later. If you have something that lasts 3,000 years, you've done something. By the way, a couple series ago, we did something called talking about greatness. And I showed you this picture of those walls, those rock walls. There's a guy in Virginia who's building these rock walls. And when he asked, why are you building rock walls? He says, because I wanted something that would outlast me. He's trying to find meaning in what he's building. So he thinks, if I create a rock wall, that's going to last a long time. And it's going to give my life meaning. Solomon's like, no, it doesn't matter how big of a wall, how big of a temple, how deep of a reservoir you make. It's not going to give you meaning. I look at all of it and I say it was meaningless. And so he says, parting isn't it and creating isn't it. What if I could just kind of live in luxury? Now, luxury is different than partying. Partying is where you just blow money for a good time. Luxury is where you get to sit back, relax, and enjoy, right? And so that's where he goes next. He says, I bought male and female slaves. I had so many slaves. I had slaves that were born in my house. I owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself, the treasures of kings and provinces. I acquired men singers and women singers and a harem as well, the delights of the heart of man. And so it's kind of like he moves through life. He starts with the party scene, then he goes to the building era, and then kind of after that, you're sort of looking to the future and says, I want to be able to sit back and enjoy and relax and have things kind of done for me. And that's kind of where people begin to look to as they look to retirement. I want to retire early. I want to amass enough wealth. And the question is, how much is enough? 5 million, 10 million, 15 million? I don't know, 1.5 billion would do. One of the clips I was going to use, it's a comedian I remember watching years ago, and he talked about how back then, I think the lottery was like $300 million, and his comedy bit was all about how all these people were playing the lottery when it was $300 million. The following week, when it was only a $2 million jackpot, nobody wanted to play. And he's like, "Oh yeah, because $2 million wouldn't do anything for you, would it? Right? It's got to be the 300, or else it's really not even worth playing." And it's just kind of this whole idea of us where we're saying, "Listen, it's got to be big if it's going to be worth it, because if it's big enough, then that will fill the void." And if it's not big enough, then what's the point? Because I know if it's not big enough, it's not going to fill the void because it's got to be big enough. And so there was this pursuit of luxury. And I think back in the 80s where people didn't care what people thought of them, they just wanted to flaunt it as good as they can, is where we really begin to see this idea of living in luxury really take off. Remember, what was the show everybody watched in the 80s? Lifestyles of the... Where were you going? A-Team again? No. Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous was what we'd watch, where Robin Leach would show us the way that you could live if you only had the means. And so they would show these major parties that people would have, and how they shipped everybody over to Egypt to have this one big shindig, and these yachts that they would live on, and the houses that they would be in. And he filled all of our minds with what? Champagne wishes and caviar dreams. And you begin to think, if I could live like that, I would know what living is. And around that same time, what industries took off? Cruise ships and all-inclusive vacation resorts. Because for just a week, you could live like you were that. And if you've ever been on a cruise, you have servants everywhere. You have people catering your every need. You have people bringing you stuff. And when you're in that moment, there's a phrase that you say as you toast up your drink on the pool deck looking out over the suns that you say, I could get used to this, right? And there's some idea, some thought, all of life, if I could just get to the point where I was doing that every day, then I would be enjoying life. Then it would have meaning and significance and fulfillment. And Solomon's like, yeah, I did, and you can only go on so many cruise ships, and you can only enjoy so many sunsets, and you can only have so many servants and things for you, and it just wasn't enough. And so he didn't have an iPod, so he had to buy the band. So he had to he had to call up Bob Marley and the Wailers, get them on retainer, say, can you just camp out in my back house when I want to sit around the pool? You need to come out and play. And when it's time for a nice dinner, romantic night with a lady, you just, call up Michael Bublé. He's on retainer. He's living in the back palace, and he just comes over, and he serenades you during dinner because you don't have the iPod stereo system. No problem. If you got enough money, you just do it. And after all, a live band's better than anything else, right? That's the way he was living. And you would say, I could get used to this. And he said, I did. But it still wasn't enough. And so he goes on, and he says, I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me, and all this my wisdom had stayed with me. In other words, in every one of my pursuits, it wasn't just an endless, meaningless pursuit. No, I was pursuing it for the express purpose of finding meaning. I was pursuing all those things, thinking to myself, maybe this will do it. Maybe this will be enough. And he says, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. This is verse 10 of chapter 2. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. And you know, my heart took delight in all my work. And I enjoyed it. It was good. I had a great time. He says, but this was the reward for my labor. Like the moment where I had that good time, the moment where I kind of stood back and said, wow, that's amazing. Or the moment where I kind of had those cheers and said, I could get used to this. Or that moment where I just said, this is living. It was a great moment. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he's not saying it wasn't a great moment. He's saying the problem was it was just a moment. And what we're searching for, we're looking for, is that fulfilling satisfaction that will last. And he says it was a great moment, but it just didn't last. He says, when I surveyed all that my hands had done and all that I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. Remember last week we looked at that word meaningless? It was a vapor. It was a mist. It was here one minute. It was gone the next. It was spectacular when it was here, but it was soon gone. It was fleeting. And it says it was like a chasing after the wind, and nothing was gained under the sun. I was running and running and running, thinking I was making some sort of headway, but when the camera panned out, I was on a treadmill, and I really hadn't gotten anywhere at all for all that energy and all that effort. And so he comes back, he says, I've been doing the parties, the projects, the money, the stuff, the women, everything, and it was all meaningless, and I've had more and more and more of all of it, and yeah, it was nice while it lasted, but it really didn't do anything. And the reason why we need to hear that and look into that is because we come to even Solomon looking at this and we say, there's still a piece of us that says, yes, but at the end of the day, there's got to be something you can do that adds meaning. And what we're convinced is that if we just had more of what we already have, if we just do more of what we're already doing, somehow that will be enough. And it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And so what we do, here's our life. Here is a snapshot of your life and mine. You go to bed at the end of the day feeling like, I just haven't done enough. There's more to do. Anybody feel that way? You get to the end of the day and there's a whole laundry list of stuff you didn't get done today because you just didn't get done enough. It's got to be pushed to tomorrow's to-do list, right? I just didn't get done enough. And then you wake up the next morning and the first thought in your mind is, I just didn't get enough sleep, right? Only to go back to bed again the next day and feel like you didn't get enough done during the day. And then you go to sleep and you feel like you didn't get enough done when it was time to sleep. And every single day is not enough, not enough, not enough. It is the epitaph of our life. It is a pursuit of more. And we just continue to say, not enough, not enough, not enough. And you begin to ask the question, how much is enough to fill this need, this desire we have in our life? And you begin to find out it is an infinite, deep need. And that's where Solomon goes. Right after chapter 2, he moves into chapter 3, and he talks about this infinite need. And after he talks about the different seasons that come in life, he says, chapter 3, verse 9, he says, and what do we get from all our work? Remember, last chapter, he says, all this work, it was all meaningless. So he says, what do we get from all our work? He's like, I've seen the burden God has laid upon the human race. This never enough. I go to work all day, it's never enough. I try to sleep at night, and I don't get enough sleep. I see the burden that this is, the monotony of all of this. And he says, but he has made everything beautiful in its time. And he set eternity in the human heart, and no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. So he pauses for a moment. He says, as long as I'm living life under the sun, it's never enough. Nothing can fill this void. And then he kind of pulls out of that and he says, the only thing that fills this void is the sense of eternity. It's eternity. That the void is so big, it is infinite, it is eternal in its size and its scope. And so the issue that we have, the reason why all of life is meaningless, the reason why everything we pursue doesn't fulfill this void, the reason why it's never enough, is because he's saying, listen, we are an eternal being, but we are living in a finite mortal life. And in a finite mortal life, you can't have this void of eternity filled up. And if you go back and you look at the way that scripture plays this all out, you go back and you see that God originally created Adam and Eve. It was a creation of God. Adam means created out of the ground. Out of the ground he was created. It was from God. And God created Adam to not experience death. He was going to be an immortal being alongside God. And what happened along the way? Sin entered the picture. And when sin entered the picture, God says the penalty of this, the result of this is death. Mortality entered in. And when mortality enters in, now you have this person, this soul that was created for eternity that is bound by mortality. And when you're bound by mortality, you'll continue to pursue that which is eternal because that's the way your soul was created. And it creates this void that is never, ever, ever enough. By the way, side note, I don't have enough time to get too deep into this, but the word vanity that he keeps using, vanity or meaningless, you know, it's the same word that Adam and Eve named their kid Abel. It's the Hebrew word is Habel, and that's the word that means meaningless or a vapor. And it's sort of maybe some commentators have said, perhaps this is a subtle, you know, thought from Solomon where he's saying, although we were created Adam, God created us, the way that God created us. When you're living life like Abel, after the fall, a mist that's here one day, gone the next, life becomes very meaningless. And we need to move back and realize that we were created as Adam. We were created to be an eternal being and move back to that point. And in Romans, I think Paul summarizes up this very well in Romans chapter 1, verse 25. He says that all of creation is yearning back for this time of eternity. And he says it this way. He says, what happened to you and I is that we exchanged the infinite, eternal creator God for that which is temporal. We began to pursue after these temporal, fleeting pleasures rather than that which is eternal and satisfying. And so we exchange the truth of God and the relationship with him that is eternal for every fleeting pleasure that would come along. Now, by the way, that's over in Romans chapter 1, verse 25. Jesus picks up on this very same theme in John chapter 4. And he's in Samaria. He's taken a shortcut from one place to another, but he's doing it for a very specific purpose. And it wasn't to save time. It was to have a meeting with this girl. And this girl, when everybody else would come to the well early in the morning to get water, she would wait till late in the day, because this girl's pattern is she was pursuing something that would give her life meaning or value or purpose. And in her, she was looking for relationship after relationship after relationship. And you can only sleep with so many guys in town before you realize it's just not filling the need. And none of the women liked her because none of the women wanted her anywhere near their husbands. Can I get an amen from the women in the house? You just didn't want her around your man. And so you didn't want anything to do with her. And so you shunned her. And so here she is coming to the well late in the day. And Jesus meets her there at the well. And he says, you know, you keep coming back to the same well day after day. You keep going to the same thing day after day, looking for that sense of wholeness and meaning and purpose. He says, if you'll come to me, if you'll have a relationship with me, I will give you living water, and you will thirst no more. It will fill the void in your soul. And he's talking about that which is eternal. And every single week, I say the very same thing, because all of Scripture points to this, and that is that the meaning of life is giving you the opportunity. It's a series of experiences that you will go through, good times and bad times, all of those pointing to giving you the opportunity to establish a loving relationship with God, which is what Jesus is offering here to this woman, to give you a loving relationship with God that you'll be able to enjoy for all eternity. And you move in that moment when you establish a relationship with God, you move from this mortal, finite being that your humanity is contained in, and your soul connects with that which is eternal, and suddenly the void now can be filled. And so he's looking at this woman saying, listen, you've been pursuing all of these temporal, momentary, fleeting things, and your drug of choice has been relationships and sex, and you're thinking if you can just have the right relationship, it'll fill that meaning. It'll make your life feel meaning and whole, and it's not working. And in the same way you got to come back to this well every day, you're coming back looking for more and more and more to fulfill. And what you're looking for ultimately is in me, a relationship with me. And he says it this way, everyone who drinks of this water, whatever that may be you're churching after, will be thirsty again. Whatever drinks the water that I give, that which is from eternity, indeed the water I give, will become a spring of water welling up in them to eternal life. I want to bring you back to eternity. I think Isaiah picks up on the same idea in Isaiah chapter 55, verse 1 and 2. He says, come to me, all you who are thirsty. Come to the waters, you who have no money. Come and buy and eat. Come and buy wine and milk without money or cost. And here's the question. Why spend money on what is not bread and your labor on what does not satisfy? Why are you pursuing more and more and more of the very same thing, thinking somehow it's going to be enough? Rather, listen to me, and you'll find what is good. So back to Ecclesiastes to close us out, picking up right where we left off in chapter 3 after he says, God has set eternity in your hearts. He says, verse 12, now, once he moves out of the life under the sun and he realizes that God set eternity in our hearts and there's something within us that's craving and yearning out for that sense of eternity, he says this, he says, I know there's nothing better for people to be happy and do good while they live. Okay, so there's something to that. Yeah, happy, do good, that's a part of life. He says, but here's what gives you the opportunity. It says that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is a gift of God, okay? Once you have a relationship with God, it allows the pursuit of all those things that you're doing here to have meaning, to be enjoyable, because you're not trying to find in them that which they cannot do. In other words, you can enjoy a relationship if you're pursuing a relationship just for simply a companionship that you might have while you're here on this earth. But if you're trying to make that relationship be something that fills the eternal void in your soul, you're going to suck the life out of that person. And we talked about that in a series a couple of while back. If you try to find meaning, purpose, fulfillment, happiness in anything else other than God, it will suck the life out of you. But when you find it in God, you can enjoy those things for what they are. And that's where he's getting at here in Ecclesiastes 3. He says, now I know that everything that God does will endure forever. And here we are. We have this desire to be a part of something that will endure forever. I want to build a wall that will last and will endure. And some up here in Northern Virginia building this wall so it'll endure. No, it's not going to work that way. When you have a relationship with God, that's what will endure. That's what will fill the void in your soul to have something that lives long after you're gone. And so he says, everything that God does will endure. Nothing can be added, nothing can be taken away from it. And God does this. Why? So people will fear him. That's the language that he uses to talk about a relationship between man and God. He says, why is it that God puts this desire in your heart for something that is eternal and lasting? Because it's what pulls you towards him. It's like I said last week, your desire to have a sense of meaning in life, it's like this homing beacon that's sending you on a pursuit looking for something. Have you ever had like a weird noise in your house? Okay, this happened to me a couple weeks ago. I got home from church first, one of the first things I do when I get home, especially if I'm home by myself, is I take a nap. So I went in and laid down, and I heard this beep, 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 beep. It's like, was that outside? No, okay. Go back. A couple minutes later, beep, beep, beep. What is that? So I get up, I check the kids' iPads, I check every electronic device that I know. Okay, it must not be in the house. Beep, beep, beep. I'll make the story shorter than it really was in real life. Turns out if you leave a hair straightener thing, doohickey, iron, whatever, I don't know what it is. If you leave it plugged in, it will shut itself off, but it'll beep just to let you know it's plugged in, okay? But it's only going to beep like once every 10 minutes. And being a guy, I don't know these things do this sort of thing. So it's like searching for a cricket in the garage, right? That little beep is a thing that's a signal to get you to search for that which is beeping, right? So you'll do something about it. Your desire for meaning is like this device that women use. When left plugged in, it's going to make you search for what it is to do something about it. And your search for meaning is a search that leads you to God, to find that he is the source of your meaning and fulfillment, happiness, and purpose. And he wants you to seek him out. As we said last week, and you'll find he's been seeking you out this whole time too. Would you join with me as we pray? Father, forgive us for thinking that what we needed in life was more. That somehow $1.5 billion, if it could do anything, it for sure could get us more. Perhaps it could give us enough. What we read about in your word is that we've seen somebody who's been there, who's done that. It says, everything you need is already available to you. Everything you're searching for is a relationship with the one who created us. So, Father, may we pause for a moment and hearken back to the words of Jesus. It says, come to me. I'm the only thing that can fill this void in your life. Come to me and you'll never thirst and never crave for anything again. So, Father, if there's anybody here who's never made that decision, may this morning, may you move their heart to say, Lord, I need you in my life. You're what I've been craving. You're what I've been desiring. Father, may we come to you, Father, to find the meaning, to fulfill me that we would look in everywhere else for. And in Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.